We got this from Houston. If you want to pray for Houston, you have to pray in her way. Pray like Beyonce when she was at the Houston Auditorium, or Billy and Dusty shooting pool at Rudyard's. Pray like you're sitting over soup at Spanish Flowers, or pho at May's steaming her glasses. Pray like the kids playing soccer on the east side, or mutton busting at the livestock show. Pray like the runners in Memorial Park, lacing them up, or the researchers in the medical center looking into microscopes. If you want to pray for Houston, you have to pray as quietly as the Rothko Chapel or the Houston Zen Center. You have to pray as loudly as the old scoreboard at the Astrodome after a Jose Cruz home run. You have to pray sitting under a live oak tree or standing next to an azalea bloom while your skin clams in the heat. If you want to pray for Houston, you have to pray without pretense. This isn't Dallas. And in a neighborly way, as friends come out to check on each other in the rain, and those who are far away watch screens and wipe our eyes. If you want to pray for Houston, raise a bottle of Shiner to the gray sky and say that 130-mile-an-hour winds and 9 trillion gallons of rain are no match for this city of such life and diversity. You can fill up our bayou, but you will never rain on our parade. This was written by Jeremy Rutledge, who is a member of the Houston Zen Center. I thought that was a nice poem. Galen writes that he's very intimate with Houston, and I think we're all feeling a little closer, a little more intimate. Our hearts are open. Galen gave us some websites that people could send money. You know, ones to Houston Zen Center. And they will be doing some relief work with the money that they receive, or they'll see that it goes to relief agencies. They did the same kind of fundraising after Katrina and New Orleans. And they also gave the website to the Houston Food Bank as well. So I can post those on the bulletin board. We have a bodhisattva of the big open heart, Avalokiteshvara, whose wisdom is to have his heart open at all times and 1,000 hands that are ready to do just what's needed. This morning we called on Avalokiteshvara to open our hearts to victims of this Houston flood and other victims of the changes we're seeing because of global warming around the world. And there's an eyeball in each of the 1,000 hands so that it can go right where it's needed, maybe from this distance, it's, it needs to be a little dollar sign, and people can send money to various organizations. Maybe people can look at reducing their carbon footprint to try to act on this in a global manner. I just started thinking of things to do from this distance to keep Houston in my heart and mind. Planting a garden, becoming a vegan, walking more and driving less, buying local, all things that we can start doing to save our planet from, you know, one big catastrophe after another. Maybe with Kokyo's permission, we can also look at the half-day sit that we're having this Saturday from 8:30 to noon. We can open that up as well for people who want to open their hearts and practice keeping their heart open for the people of Houston. They can come sit. When I was in Portugal, there was a big fire that caused many deaths, and Portugal had declared 3 days of mourning, and the churches were really full. And I think we're being touched in such a way with the enormity of the tragedy in Houston, and we can open the doors to the Zen Center for people who want to practice opening their heart this Saturday, 8:30 to noon. Dogen instructs us to drop off body and mind. And dropping off body and mind is opening the heart. When we can sit quietly in the Zendo and abide in the source of our consciousness, the source of our lives, we are connected and intimate with all things. And when we're off the cushion and we've got the hands and heart of Avalokiteshvara in the world, our heart is the organ that connects us with all living beings. And that's why it said that this the wisdom that we cultivate on the cushion is none other than the compassion that we demonstrate in the world. That the wisdom and compassion are not two, they're not different. The monk Dao Wu asked Shurto, Sekito, Shurto. Dao Wu asks, what is the fundamental meaning of the Buddha Dharma? Why do we do this? Why do we sit here and practice dropping off body and mind and cultivating a big heart? What is the fundamental meaning of Buddha Dharma? And Shurto answered, not to attain, not to know, really not to land any place, not to hold on, grab, or attain anything, not to think and ponder and understand and settle with a good idea, but just to remain open and aware, just like Avalokiteshvara, just is open and aware to suffering in the world, and not to land any place. The meaning of Buddha Dharma is no attainment, not knowing. The heart isn't about grabbing on to anything or getting anything. The heart isn't about understanding or figuring out. The heart that we cultivate in this practice is about touching, is about nourishing, is about love, is about support, is about connecting, and this is our practice. This is our practice to develop this body and mind, this state of being. I'm reading this fascicle. It's out of Dogen's Going Beyond Buddha. We're developing this heart and mind that goes beyond Buddha, with its vastness, with its intimacy, with its wisdom and compassion. How can that be? How can there be any practice that's bigger than Buddha, that goes beyond Buddha, that we think of as the whole universe that contains everything, that's intimate with everything? And of course, in our school of Buddhism, we're practicing just the way Buddha practiced. After his enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, he kept practicing on and on, even as the Buddha. He sat and was awakened again and again to every situation, just the way tragedies like Katrina and Houston awaken our hearts, maybe break our hearts, but really wake it up. How can I connect with such a vast tragedy? And this is Buddha's practice that goes beyond his enlightenment. Taigen Layton said in an article about going beyond Buddha, he said, we don't just become Buddha and then just kind of love how it feels for the rest of our lives. We really use that awakening. we practice that awakening over and over again as causes and conditions arise. So let's use these connecting organs that touch and nourish and love and support and help out. Let's cultivate that wisdom and compassion. Cultivate this state that is going beyond Buddha. I was thinking when I was making this list of things to do that could support the people of Houston, I was thinking, you know, actually I should just sit. And I bet my list will be different after sitting with this heart that's been transformed by abiding in the source and being open to everything and rejecting nothing. I bet my list will be different with after dropping body and mind and opening the heart. You know, when you can, drop body and mind and open your heart with maybe a little opening, a little more opening around how to support Houston, how to support the victims of these huge storms, and see what list you can make for yourself. And we offer the Zendo here at any time that you'd like to drop body and mind. You know, us Soto Zen Buddhists should be the experts in dropping body and mind. I thought Shohaku did a good job of meditation instruction, explaining Dogen's fascicle on meditation, and using the story of Yangshan, where he instructs us to what are you doing sitting when you're sitting on the cushion? What are you doing in that meditation posture? And Yangshan said, thinking, not thinking. And his monk, what did his monk say? Or the monk said, what's that? What's thinking, not thinking? And this is the question. What did Yangshan say? What did we hear last week? Non-thinking or beyond thinking. And I thought Shohaku did a good job. So I want to I don't think that we can expect of ourselves that every time we sit down, we will drop off body and mind for 40 minutes. But I think we should know the ins and outs of it. I think we should know the ins and outs of this Zazen. You know, Zazen is, what's the word? Ineffable. You know, you can't really say what it is. We join Zazen that's already in process. Zazen is as big as the universe. But it's a little like love, since we've been talking about open heart and love. You know, we can't really say what love is. We can say a lot about love. All of us could. All of us have been in love at least a time or two. And so we've looked at it pretty carefully, even though you know, nobody could ever pin us down. Like, you know, that's exactly what love is. And it's the same about this practice of zazen and dropping off body and mind. We can talk a lot about it, and we can ponder what it's like for these 40 minutes. And we can follow the instructions. And I think I think one of the reasons that we all come back, and I recognize everybody in this room, which means you've all come back a time or two as well. I think we come back because we've experienced, or we've abided in drop off body and mind. Maybe just a glimpse, maybe a quick breeze going through a time or two in meditation. But I think the fact that we've tasted it means that's why we come back. There's that source. There's that heart that fills the entire universe. And as much as it's sometimes difficult to, say, get here at 5:45 in the morning, or as much as, you know, it might look difficult, like sitting for 3.5 hours, 8:30 to noon, can anybody do that? Yeah, I think we've all sort of said, yeah. You know, I've looked at that mind and body. I've been in that state, if only briefly, and I want to get good at that. I want to understand that, I want to penetrate that, is a favorite word of Dogen's, or I want to study that completely. And I think that's why we come back over and over again and participate in this practice. Ooh. I actually think we benefit from the ineffability of it, because, you know, when people talk or write about it, they use such great poetic metaphors. And as I've said before, we just have to find the metaphor that speaks directly to us, whether it's dropping off body and mind, or whether it's turning the light inward, whether it's thinking, not thinking, beyond thinking, you know, whether we call it silent illumination. I'm just trying to think of all the different metaphors that teachers have used to describe this practice of zazen. And I get, you know, I find my favorites, and they enter me, you know, here and there. When someone says it just in a little different way, I said, "Oh, I've got to look into that." And that's the way I felt last week with Shohaku. I really wanted to understand or penetrate or study this think, not thinking, beyond thinking. Kokyo, one commentary I read used the term before thinking. Have you heard that? The character that's said beyond thinking is sometimes before. What is it? He, shiki?
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty good. That even has that, before thinking has that, turning the light inward and abiding in that source of consciousness before our thoughts become ornamented. So I actually thought that was a pretty good metaphor too. But I like, do you remember when Shohaku last week was, so I want to practice this. That's what I want to do. I want to, practice this metaphor. He said, thoughts arise with this hand, and the subject, the self here, kind of connects with those thoughts, and that's thinking. And not thinking is when we don't connect. I think the reason they went even further into before thinking or beyond thinking was they didn't want it to sort of just stop the thoughts. Like, you know, a thought comes up as we're sitting here and we just clamp it down. That wasn't the teaching. That's kind of a judgment, you know, like I'm doing, if a thought comes up, I'm doing something wrong. He really wanted us to know that these thoughts continue and that we're just not engaging with them. And that simultaneity of thoughts arising and non-engagement is this non-thinking or beyond thinking or before thinking. And so I practiced, you know, what that could feel like. And this is what I came up with. And maybe you'll indulge me here. And, you know, who was forced to indulge me on this was those five poor people who showed up for Zazen instruction on Saturday, and they got me. And this is what I was thinking of. So I made them do this. And so I thought, oh, I took pity on them and said, I'll have to at least try it with people I know, friends. So what I came up with is something we've all done in Zazen, sit in our perfect posture. And I'm just going by what, Shohaku was talking about. Shohaku says, you know, we can sit here and we can get really angry. A memory will come up, and we'll get really angry, and we're just sitting, and the person isn't even here. That's engaged with the thoughts that come up. So the practice I came up with, can I sit here in Zazen posture, and can I just remember a conversation that I had earlier in the day, and go over it, go over what that person said, go over what I said, and maybe even to gild the lily, if I were to see that person again, I can entertain myself saying, how would I start up that conversation again with that person if I saw them again tomorrow or the next day? So we've all done this, but just do it for just a minute right now. Remember a conversation. Feel like you're going to start that conversation again. You don't have to get mad or pound your fist. It can be just a simple conversation. So that's the thinking part of a memory that comes up and the self that engages it and keeps going with it. It even makes it a little more solid. And then Shohaku talked about, you know, in the midst of that, can we just remember, can we just sit, is what Shohaku says. Can we just sit rather than engage? And I went a little further. I really wanted to tell myself, can I disengage with those thoughts? Can I just let those thoughts be in that parallel universe just before me, but not engage? And I could really feel it. So this part of the exercise, maybe continue with that conversation, and then, after a very brief time, see if you can say, now I'm disengaging with that thought, and I'm just sitting, and see what that experience is like. It really gets calm and quiet in my head, even though I'm still very much aware that that I'm sitting here and I've been participating in this exercise of bringing up a memory, and you know that memory still goes on, and it just takes the tiniest little waving away of that memory to keep it from engaging. And that's really the only effort that's needed, to just keep those thoughts and memories from sticking to me. Or from me sticking to them. I want to take some responsibility. I've got a real propensity to wanna take hold and keep going with that conversation again, but too, it just takes the effort needed to just sit and not engage is just that little wave. Another image I've got is I've got this stove with a pilot light, and one of the burners is slow to come on, and I can really give it a big blow and pop it up. But just recently I found out that I can turn on the gas, and if it doesn't go by itself, I can just go like that, and it'll pop up. And that it's no effort at all, and that's the kind of small effort that it just takes to maintain this just sitting and not engaging and crystallizing those thoughts more and more, and just dropping body and mind and just opening the heart that's as big as the universe. Just this little wave keeps that heart open. So that's the metaphor and the method I've been practicing with this week. That's been very helpful. And like I say, it might not be the metaphor that opens your heart or that gets you curious about the experience of dropping off body and mind, or not attaining, or not knowing, not settling in on a thought. That great feeling of just being ready for everything. We all have to find our metaphor, but because we've tasted a little bit, I think I've said that. That's why we're all back here. You all must have a metaphor. You must all have a method that gets you into that open-hearted space. So keep practicing that way. Catherine, this has a clock on it. Catherine wanted us to be aware of when the self arises, and I think I can define self as that subject that meets with these thoughts. And when that fateful meeting happens, the familiar self of Patrick is right there front and center. And it wasn't a warning, particularly, that she wasn't giving us a warning that, you know, don't let that person ever come into the Zendo again. Don't let that self arise. It was just kind of a mindfulness exercise that there's more potential to this self that's just holding on tightly to one idea. If that self was to disengage just a little bit, it might be open to a lot of other possibilities. It might be, and so that neither this nor that state, neither tightly the self nor immobile on the cushion, abiding in the source, you know, somewhere in the middle, can we live our lives there? Can we be mindful of where that is? And when Shohaku was talking about, you know, practicing in the kitchen with the fascicle, he mentioned the instructions to the cook. You know, that's that practice. I mean, the mind has to be engaged enough so that you know how to work the salad spinner, and you know how to turn on the burner of the stove. I mean, you have to have this mind that's engaging with old memories. But can you also not hold so tightly, say, to the recipe that needs to come out exactly right? Can you let go of those memories just a little bit, that you can be open to all possibilities, in a way that you're practicing in the kitchen? You know, maybe you have 5 cups of a different kind of rice, and it's cooking a little slower than usual. Can you be open to that, and not kind of create suffering in the kitchen or suffering in the sashin because you've got an idea of how fast rice should cook? So that that meditation instruction of Yangshan and Dogen and Shohaku of not engaging with those thoughts so tightly can be a place that that we can practice here on the cushion, as well as outside of the Zendo as well. So is there, the monk Dao Wu goes on, after hearing that the fundamental meaning of Buddha Dharma is not attaining, not knowing. Dao Wu asks again, well, is there something more in our practice of going beyond Buddha, in our practice of meditation and zazen? Is there something further or not that can describe the fundamental meaning, or that can point to a practice of the fundamental meaning of the Buddha Dharma? And Shurto says, the vast sky does not hinder white clouds from flying. And can that be, what a practice that is? Can we, can this person who has practiced, who, I'm using, not using the word practice right, this person who's got many habits and does things the same way so much, and has an idea of the way the world should be, can that same person develop a practice that doesn't hold anything else from the full fruition of their lives? Can this self that arises so easily with just the smallest memory, I can hold on to that and go with the whole memory for the full 40 minutes. Can I, as Uchiyama says, can I open the hand of thought? Can I let go of that memory and be open enough and comport myself in such a free manner that I'm not holding anybody else back, or I'm not interfering with anybody else? Another way to look at that line, can the vast sky not hinder the white clouds flying? Can my actions be as a free-floating white cloud that just ambles along according to causes and conditions and still remembers the vastness of my true self, of original mind, of the source of consciousness? Can I maintain such an open, compassionate, big-hearted action in the world that I'm not only doing Buddha activity in the world, but I'm also remembering that I'm not separate from Buddha, that I'm intimate with Buddha, that Buddha and I aren't two, which is what Dogen is teaching us. And is there any other way to take our boats to Houston and save those millions of people, or offer our money to aid agencies, or on a daily basis really, really join in the efforts to turn around global warming? Is there any other way than as this cloud that is so free to do, that has so much potential, that's also not different than the vast sky, that is also it? So maybe in these last few minutes, some ideas about Houston and global warming have come up that we can talk about, or that we've, it's been it's actually been nice to look at the whole rest of the world through the lens of the way the world really is right now, which is, you know, all that suffering, to really not be able to turn away. It's been nice to abide there. Mary.
You know, one of the things that I've appreciated, I was visiting my dad recently, and he likes to watch TV, so we watched quite a bit of the news around Harvey and what's happened. And one of the things that just really touched my heart is how many people came out to help, is from all over the place. People just brought their boats or their jet skis, or, you know, went and helped all these people that they don't know. And you know, I think it was a good example of humanity in action and how people really can open their hearts and care about other people that they don't know in any way, and animals, you know, risking their lives to save horses and dogs and mm-hmm. all sorts of other beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, just that caring and compassion that is so different than what we saw just a couple weeks ago in Charlottesville, and it gave me hope for humanity of,
yeah.
There is this oneness and there is this openness. And how do we cultivate that not only in ourselves, but in others as well?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was really heartwarming to me to see how many people wanted to help others.
Yeah, yeah. What a great contrast. And it couldn't have come, I mean, we don't want it to ever come like this, but to have our eyes opened and our hearts opened in such contrasting ways. Yeah, thank you. Joyce.
Sense of compassion, humanity, bring our humanity back together. Do you have any thoughts? Not always, but often.
Yeah.
So the greatest outpour of individual humanity coming together collectively.
Yeah, yeah. All I can say is I am really amazed at how tightly I hold on to my individual self, and so it doesn't surprise me that it would take something huge to break that open, kind of on a large scale, you know, such that we see each other as connected rather than just, you know, individuals going about, you know, our daily lives. I think that's all I can say is my own experience of how tightly I hold on to the individual, this individual, and it does events like this and the refugee crisis in Europe and the Mid East and, you know, any number of tragedies over the last decade, our own earthquake, you know, in 89, I have that same question. You know, this is such a wonderful feeling to feel so connected with so many people, how can I keep this going? How can I cultivate a body and mind that is connecting with people like that all the time? Really, I'm really glad to see you. You know, what can I do for you now? Or can you help me with this right now? What a great body and mind to cultivate. Do you have more ideas? Yeah. We're not the only ones. Yeah, no, you're right. And something wonderful comes from the pine cone, and may this energy of the bursting of the pine cone and the bursting open of our hearts continue on endlessly. Yeah, thank you, Nettie.
Flooding in India and Bangladesh and Nepal at the moment as well. I think it's really good that you're talking about climate change, because that is actually compassion. It feels like that's compassionate for us to make that connection. To feel that we that to talk about that as being political or something, I don't think we should be discouraged because it's compassion that for us to try and to make the connection so that more people will start doing things like growing our own food and investing in their company, so less people will suffer in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's good. The more of us that make the connection and are confident enough to say so, I think the better.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow feel intimidated and that we shouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the courage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's especially helpful to think too that that maybe with my heart open just a little bit more from listening to the radio or seeing the news on TV, that I can practice reducing my carbon footprint with real faces or real images in mind, it's not just for a faceless crowd or a generation from now that I can't really fathom, but I can actually remember, you know, some of those real heartfelt things on the TV and say, you know, this is exactly why I'm recycling here and I'm planting here and why I'm going to walk downtown today and not drive downtown. So, thank you. Thank you. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them.
Oh.